Without further ado, we will launch into the wonderful, deep, swoony waters beyond the sea of the House Gaga session, talking about speechless manifestation. So here we go, everybody. Fasten your seatbelts. The House Gagas of Iandom are here.
Okay, Kurt. You were given some clues there, so proceed.
I would like to know more clues about manifestation beyond stating your desires. Can you help me?
Yes. That's wonderful. That's the next phase. That's the next phase. We told Bob this was going to be an eventful engagement. You're going on the next stage of the leading edge of creation, which is speechless manifestation, Bob.
Speechless manifestation. You heard it first here.
Now, we said you had to say. We said you had to speak it. We said it ain't a thinking man's game, and it's not. We said let your mind be autonomic. Let it do what it naturally does and stop trying to drive yourself. A funny thing happens when you do that on the way to the forum, when you drive yourself there. If you end up at the forum, that's wonderful, but don't drive yourself. But now it's come to the place where you know the essence of your creations as God. So now you can, but do you remember Tabitha on Bewitched?
Bewitched.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She was able to twinkle her nose and get shit, and she didn't say nothing. She couldn't even talk. She directed her predicated outcomes based on a knowing. No, I don't. I think I want to try it. No, 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 no. Don't do it that way. Because I think I might want shit flavored ice cream. But yeah. Don't do it because it'll show up, and then every ice cream will taste like shit.
Mm.
Can't undo it. Okay. So, yes, the next phase, the next primer will be perfecting speechless manifestation.
I knew Kurt was a good question asker.
First time I ever said that
in the history of humanity, the history of anybody, all species.
Good Kurt.
In the beginning was no longer the word.
Yeah.
Well, there was a word, but we forgot it.
And they saw the word. And they were so afraid.
We saw the word, and we took it in our mouth, and it was a stranger, and we took it in. And we swallowed it, and it was vile.
They were so afraid that they tried to eat the evidence.
And Luminol wouldn't even wash away the blood.
We have Veronica. We have somebody named 520. Put their hand up. A new person, maybe. You can go ahead, 520-829. You want to speak? You, yes.
Yes. I had a question, but I forgot, so you guys can go ahead.
You're rather
basic. We like it. No, we like it.
I already know it.
Yeah, we do.
Go get that guy.
We like it. This is great fun because when you forget it, that's right. That's good. That's good. That's giving it in advance. That means you gave it in advance.
You gave it the
so
office.
You don't have to be a question. You can just engage. We say you have to ask us questions, but to you, we say, why don't we just sort of kick it a little bit? Speak to us.
Do you hear me?
Yes, we do.
Oh,
but even when you're on mute, we do.
Oh, great. Well, Ian, I've been doing what you're talking about, Tabitha, for a while. How come I haven't manifested anything I've been working towards?
You have.
I have.
It's all sitting at your back door. You just won't open the door and let it in.
What am I doing wrong?
Nothing. You just need to allow it. You got it relaxed down. Great. Now allow it.
Okay, I have to work on that.
No, don't. Now, there you go. See, there's your trouble. You don't got to work. You've relaxed into it. Let it be. Don't push against it. If you're trying to force it, it can't get to you.
you, because I always
you
been manifesting
it. You need
that
it. You need it. If you've got money, you don't want it. The only reason you don't have something is that you don't want it. And if you don't want it,
is that Linda, Stephanie? That's Renee. Right. Okay, back to 520. See, you're the perfect asker. You don't care. You don't have nothing to say. Can't remember. So open your mouth.
Beautiful.
Say whatever comes out of you.
Chat.
Well,
yeah.
I was listening to the wordless manifestation. It sounded pretty interesting. Could you expand more on that?
Yeah, it's the OMG, what's the BFD? We're communicating with letters. And you knew what I meant, yes?
I didn't quite hear what you said.
Yeah, it's the OMG, specifically, what is the BFD?
Oh,
letters.
Okay, I understand.
Okay, you know that you understand what? Oh my God, what's the big fucking deal? Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Now we communicated, and we didn't use words; we used letters. Those letters communicate. Now Bob, being the grammarian, is just slaying his little Holy Spirit because he's got holes in his spirit because he wants to be precise about what is this being said. Well, that's being obfuscated with nobody knows what anything is, and they make up these gibberish little ridiculous things, but yet everybody's communicating with them, using them, and now it's even in pictures and splashes and tit for tat and who lived that, and your world is prescribed by episodes of the Squid Billies.
Hello and welcome. It's a session of the Gagas with Allison Sheila and our special guest, Deb West. Welcome, Deb.
Hey, Sheila Allison.
Yay! Hello and welcome. It's a session of the Gagas with Allison Sheila and our special guest, Deb West. Welcome, Deb.
Hey, Sheila Allison.
Hey.
Lovely to have you. And
thank you.
And we just listened to the segment of the speechless manifestation from last payday. Actually, when this goes out, it'll be the week before. So whatever that was, June 21st. So what do you think of that?
I thought it was very interesting. He said Ion said it's the next stage on the leading edge of creation. And I've been having a lot of thoughts about, lately in my experience, I've seen outward examples of how my thoughts really do create my reality. And I went back to the early days, you know, where Ion would say, think any dirty thought you want. It's all what comes out of your mouth. And so I always wondered if that wasn't sort of a primer course to train the thought world, because I have a mind that is verbal and chatters all the time, more than it is
visual. I wouldn't
have
guessed that.
Huh?
Sorry, it's being amusing. I said I wouldn't have guessed that. Yes,
I know. So when I heard speechless manifestation, that was where I went on it, was, is it the thoughts that we create in our mind that is speechless manifestation? But then to go on, Ion says that it's based on a knowing, not what you think. I might, I may, will it show up, will it not show up, but just that alignment of true knowing.
Yeah, because he said it's not a thinking man's game.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that, Deb. That was really, when you just said that really struck a chord of, if I heard you correctly, when you were saying, you know, Ion was talking to us about the words, and I was way
mm-hmm.
in that. even before Ion, you know, and that was such an affirming thing when I got to talk to him about them about that. But so we had that primer course to work out what we say to be cognizant of what comes out of our mouth. Now phase two is to clean up the thoughts. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not a thinking man's game, there must be some creation that begins in the thoughts. Gee, do you think?
I no. don't, but...
do you know? But I know what you're saying. It's not a thinking man's game.
No, yeah, because I can hear him say, clean up your thoughts, and I can hear Ian go, ew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dirty him up. No.
Well, I mean, you can't control your thoughts. Isn't that what he says repeatedly? Your thoughts are just... So it's not a thinking. So if it's a knowing, it's not a thought. It's not a thoughting. It's a knowing.
Well, even the idea of controlling your thoughts or controlling your words is stepping in the shit of not knowing. You know, it puts you back in that time game. I think you're... when we talked about that, Deb, too, but put you in that position of forcing and not allowing.
Right.
You know, why your words, but you can't control, I mean, controlling your words, there was also that whole thing where can you control the words that come out of your mouth? I mean, you get more conscious of what you're saying, but you just, your ears hear what your mouth says and it doesn't like it or says, oh, that's, I don't want to create that. You can just overlay it. So it's never a...
Right. And that's what I was really referencing is that I've been doing is overlaying when I hear these thoughts. You know, one thing Bob said that really struck a chord with me, he said, you know, you have to realize that the labyrinth of the mind, you know, is just part of your being, and you learn how to deal with it. That softened it for me. So, you know, if the speechless manifestation is coming from a place of true knowing, there can't be thought in it. The no thought allows that space to open up and happen.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you talk about the shit-flavored ice cream. He says, you don't say, I want to try this or I might do this. It's like, no, you just... And how does Tabitha, one would imagine, didn't say, I'm going to try this. Tabitha just twitched her nose and said, this is, I'm going to have this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the sheer act of trying it instead of knowing it puts the time game in there again, because you're waiting for a result based on your not knowing. You're only trying, you're only thinking it might happen. And the way that you get a, you know, a qualifier is when it shows up, then you go, oh, okay. Instead of, it's you're changing your essence, where you're seated. If you're sitting in a knowing place, there won't be a gap. A gap kind of implies time to me.
Yeah, it has to be that seamless alignment with non-physical.
Mm-hmm. Which is why things show up immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and going back to the trying, I've always heard the word trying is it's very trying. It's, you know, it's exhausting. It's it denotes effort, because he also, in the beginning, he says you don't drive yourself there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which that's a tough one for me because I like driving.
You mean you like the act of getting there? Or are you being literal?
Well, the driving of it is being sitting in the driver's seat. Is driving it. I drive it.
Well, right after that, he said, you know the essence of creation as a God, and that it's based on a knowing. So if you're driving yourself, then that's got to be the mind and the, maybe the mind part of it, but then manifestation would happen. You have to know that you're a God. You have to know the power of your creation. And then I think it's that seamless alignment, you know, when it's all just one, it happens. Because we all have those don't you have those periods of where you just feel like everything is perfectly lined up and you're, you know, happy and la, la, la going along. And then the next day you wake up and you're like, what universe is this? Because everything's fucking screwed up.
Yeah, everything is really difficult.
And you don't know why your train got off the track, or maybe it doesn't make sense, but it happens.
Are you giving yourself another opportunity to line up?
Right, because that's part of the contrast. You know, when Ion was talking to Piggy on the phone on payday, he said, line it up. You play the fool. You know, what happens is when you find your way to get happy and you line yourself up again, I think basically you just brush your hands off and you know that you're a God and you know that you can change it right now.
Mm-hmm. You're driving.
I went to a real, like, I mean, to get that, I went to almost a place of devastation, and then this huge, you know, beautiful creation showed up, but I don't want to get to the edge like that again. It was too white knuckled.
Was that recently?
Yeah, it was in the fall. I mean, it was just, it looked like doom and gloom, and what I had to do is I had to keep lining myself up. And I finally got to a place to where I just said, fuck it all. You know, if it's going to go to this place and it's going to be that bad, then, you know, it's all just non-reality anyway. So if that's the way it's going to be, I'll just deal with it and let go of it. And I just kept lining myself up, and it didn't make sense in my head because it wasn't practical, and I just kept saying, it's always worked before, it's going to work now, and I don't know how, when, why, what, who's going to show up, but I need a damn miracle. The miracle came.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice. It sounds like it's the letting go of control, right?
Mm-hmm.
And driving almost implies forced direction, because it doesn't, it almost, if you think of the word, Sheila, isn't it almost like getting from point A to point B?
Well, right. When you drive, you steer and you control the direction of the car, the speed.
Mm-hmm.
But you want it the way you want it, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
You can say how you want it.
But
so, I just had that horrible vision. I just had that horrible visual of when I was in the whole Christian fundamental thing, you know, let Jesus drive the car. Take your hands off the wheel.
Mm-hmm. And how'd that work for you?
Is that not very good?
Well, maybe that leads to expectations. It's kind of like, you know, my wonderful pet cat. Now, I didn't want a cat. I didn't think I needed a pet. I didn't want a pet. I certainly didn't want a cat. But this little cute kitten showed up, and 11 years later, he's been just quite a joy and a delight to have around. So, you know, maybe there were too many rules around that, and just letting him in, you know, opened up a whole wonderful thing. So maybe how it shows up, we don't always understand.
And sometimes you don't know what you want.
Yeah.
Or like, you don't know what you like. Like, you don't, people don't know what they like. They like what they know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bigger arena of knowing what you like. If you let go of, oh, I like this, I don't like that. But then that's how you decide what you want.
But then having a lot of your definitions falling away, and so maybe, you know, it's a new environment. So the what you like and the things that you want can change form or definition for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's always been a theme for me, was taking the good and bad out of everything. You know, frees you up completely to only have experience. But then we went to preference, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
And I love the way Ayan is constantly referring to, okay, well, you could either have, you know, a tenderloin steak or a ribeye, or you could have a tenderloin steak or a, you know, rabbit. I mean, or shit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's, yeah, I need more contrast for that to work, but like the shit ice cream, that was funny. but that not placing, kind of like what you were talking about, Deb, with what showed up for you, it sounds like, not placing all the normal qualifiers on it as to this is horrible, this is awful,
mm-hmm.
you know, how did I get this? And so you dropping all the biases.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also about, it's that other leap of, well, I think we're unlearning a lot of stuff we learned about manifestation. Let's say it that way,
yes.
too.
Yes.
I think there was a little bit in the way of how we perceived we were manifesting things. So, and there were a lot of rules around it. And now with these no rules, because every time I hear another rule from Ayan that's not a rule, it feels
mm-hmm.
even more formless.
Mm-hmm.
It's like speechless manifestation. Okay. That's got a lot of latitude in it. Awesome.
What does manifestation mean? I looked up that word versus creation, and he said it's the next step in the leading edge of creation. So that to me says it's not a stopping point. It's like the next sort of level.
Yeah, no kidding.
So manifestation is an event, action, or object that clearly shows or embodies something, especially a theory or an abstract idea. Creation is an action or process of bringing something into existence. So maybe the speechless manifestation, is that the prelude to creation?
They sound like they dovetail beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's why one word doesn't apply as far as the creation or manifestation.
Right.
Discussion.
Both and.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hmm.
Our little minds are going so fast, we're silent. Go ahead.
I know. So
well,
now go ahead.
He went on about the OMG, what's the BFD?
Mm-hmm.
So those aren't words, they're letters. So the form of communication, and that
changed.
And then he went into communication. People aren't even, you know, they're using the picture or they're using this or that to communicate. They're not using words.
Which sounds like
mm-hmm.
it's a precursor to telepathy, practically, not using anything.
Yeah.
Because you're always going to be moving and changing how you do things. So it sounds like that's, you know, another step for that positioning.
Well, if you hear the whole talk about the EMP going down, telepathy would be necessary, in my opinion.
mm-hmm. Well, it happens already. I know we all have examples of it. It's just interesting as to
mm-hmm.
the essence of it or the origin of it. You know, you know somebody, you think about them and they call on the phone.
Right.
And that's a given now. It's like rarely does somebody call that I haven't just thought about them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe this is a training process of sorts. This is we're easing into it with the steps.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a relief. I mean, when he said speechless manifestation is the next stage, I mean, I just, like, perked right up and said, wow, and wrote that
mm-hmm.
down. And him. You mean I don't have to, like, be crazy with my wordage? You know, it's like I can ease off on that. There's another way that's better or easier.
I think you still have to monitor and I have to listen to my words. I have a challenge with that in the business world because it's cyclical and customers can say, oh, I know it's slow right now. And so, you know, how do you be professional and talk about the business environment and then, you know, I don't want to lock into, well, yeah, it's slow and, you know, nothing's moving because then that's what happens. But when I say, cars still sell and people still buy, then they appear from nowhere and they do.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely changed that when I've noticed because instead of what I would used to do would be to say, if somebody made a comment, I felt compelled to respond,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a comforting comment of sorts or something that engaged them in a way that I thought they wanted to be heard or whatever, or that I wanted to present myself. And when I stopped having to respond just to respond, it left them, you know, kind of hearing their own words and going, you know, often they'll be the ones then saying, well, actually, it doesn't have to be that way, does it?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Just no response.
It's interesting doing it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they're waiting for you to come down to their level of why something's not happening or working.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to agree with their position. And in order to agree with their position, don't you have to kind of like step down into their position?
Well, or if you even engage in it, it can be a downer. You know, the other night I was at a dinner party, and one of the girls there was talking about the disease she'd had. And then I don't know how the shingles vaccine, just like seriously, there's now a vaccine for that, came up. And I said, I don't know. What did I say? I said, there's a vaccine for shingles? And she looked at me. It was kind of funny as I recall the look in her eyes. She goes, if you had the chicken pox, you must get a shingles vaccine. Because you have that virus in your body. And I immediately thought, honey, not in mine. Never did, never will. And I just looked at her and I said, well, I never had the chicken pox. That's all that. But, you know, if I would have responded, my point being, or I don't believe in the shingles virus, then it just would have been engaging what I don't want in my world in the first place.
Yeah. Plus, I don't think maybe we've tried it even just a little bit, but often if you even go down that road, nobody hears you. It's like, no, the conversation basically takes another turn anyway because it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's no frequency match there, so it's not going to keep going anyway. But, yeah, wasted breath for sure on that one.
Yeah.
Gosh, there was something right before you were saying that about shingles. Anyway, keep talking. I can't.
About the response. We were talking about the response to people. And you not responding and how it took a turn. Did that help?
No, thank you. We can talk about forgetting now.
Yeah. Let's do talk. What are we talking about?
The prevalence of forgetting and how actually Ion calls it a good thing. I love that. What was the comment? When you forget?
Nope. God, yeah. So we forgot what he said to the forgetting comment.
It's when you forget, do you say crying it out in your knowing? No, I better not comment on that.
It allows you to have the question or allows them to answer the question, allows them to formulate the question. I don't remember. I always thought it was part of a clearing of the mind. You know, that it was really helping with the whole reset. This forgetting thing is, as soon as you learn to not be frustrated by it, you know, my first thought was, okay, well, I don't need to know that. It's obviously not relevant, not important. I don't need to store it. Then
Well, it's if everything's stored in the cloud, then we can just access everything there. So of course,
and if we're always remembering, if we remember everything, then are we locked into the time-space continuum?
Yes.
I used to be able to tell you exactly what I did on this weekend, these dates, a year ago. I could remember it all. But that really puts me in a linear measurement of time. I mean, we are letting go of time in this ascension process, so maybe that's why we're forgetful or part of the why.
But, I mean, Bob does that all the time. He talks about what happened when and what date and who did this at this date and at this time this happened. And so why he doesn't strike me as somebody who's locked into time.
No.
He seems like more like an encyclopedia, though, more like he generates it as needed, almost like he's the cloud. He's got a cloud mentality already.
Right, yeah, like he just pulls out that book off the shelf, references that, puts it back. It's just all right there.
That's a good analogy or a good observation.
I'm sorry, you guys.
I
had to put you on mute in my hotel room. They were trying to make it up. So what did you say while I was telling her to go away?
I said, is Bob the cloud of glory, or is he in the cloud of glory? Is access to the cloud?
And I said nothing, right?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, go away.
Go away.
I shouldn't have put it on mute. I don't know. Ian answered to me or pointedly said to me, follow the cloud on the 21st payday as well. And it's, have we totally defined the cloud? Of course not.
Well, there's a biblical reference of the cloud of glory.
Right.
And then there's the apple cloud where everything's stored and, you know, you just go into the cloud and retrieve it. And
what was the biblical portion? I know they've already discussed all this, I'm pretty sure, on payday. But, I mean, never hurts to reiterate. But you guys are the scholars, or Sheila's the biblical scholar.
I am not. No, I was just thinking that.
No, I'm just thinking, I don't remember.
I'll insert here that is one thing. I know you guys didn't hear the excerpt that Ed put up of that new show that's been really intriguing to me called The Departed, because I've watched commercials come up for it. I don't think it's started yet. It's another series that's coming on. So he put up the making of The Departed. It was like a 30-minute video on the Ian and Bob site. And they were interviewing all the characters, and it's a very interesting cast. And then there was a physicist getting interviewed and a theologian. And they were both saying things that, well, Ian wrote it for sure, you know, whether they'll say it or not. But it was... the theologian was talking, he mentioned the cloud, and it was about 2% of the people's population disappears, and where have they gone, basically, and where does humanity end up when something like that happens? What do they start questioning? And I won't go into all the details they said, but it was fascinating because about 15 minutes into it, the theologian said something about, well, a lot of people believe that kind of a disappearance represents the rapture. And there was a reference to the cloud from the Bible, and I don't know enough about the Bible to have it trigger anything in my world. But I'm sure it's no accident I'm sure it's the cloud of glory.
Well, one reference is in Chronicles. Now, this is just, Googling, but... it says, God's glory fills the temple in unison when the trumpeters and the singers were to make themselves heard with one voice to praise and to glorify the Lord. and when they lifted up their voice accompanied by trumpets and cymbals and instruments of music, and when they praised the Lord, saying, He indeed is good, for His loving kindness is everlasting. Then the house of the Lord was filled with a cloud, so that the priest could not stand to minister because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord filled the house of God. I mean, that hits me this way. It's in unison, when the trumpeters and the singers were to make themselves heard with one voice to praise and glorify the Lord is us, it's in capital letters, it's you, God, and accompanied by trumpets and cymbals and instruments and music, that could be, you know, angels and all of those frequencies. And so that when you're filled with the glory of you as God, nothing can penetrate or interfere. You can't be ministered to. You can't have a disease cast upon you. You know, none of these less thanisms.
Mm-hmm.
Or outer influences, so to speak. Does that make any sense?
Totally. That was perfect.
So, and then there's other references, too, that Moses could not enter the tent because it was filled with the, because the cloud had settled on it.
It's Exodus chapter 40, verse 34. Then a cloud covered the tent of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Moses was not able to enter the tent of the congregation because the cloud abode thereon, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And when the cloud was taken up from over the tabernacle, the children of Israel went outward in all their journeys. But if the cloud was not taken up, then they journeyed not till the day that it was taken up.
So then if the cloud is filled with the glory of the Lord, which is you, then it's got to be pretty full. You know, you got to really know it and believe it and be aligned with it to move along, I guess, in this ascension process. Or maybe that is the ascended point where you're just, that's what you're full of. I mean, because Zion has referenced that this love is something you can't even put a definition around. You can't even really perceive it. He's not said it in those words, but, you know, this love is just so amazing.
And my literal perception of a cloud has no edge in a way.
Right.
I don't see it as, and it's fairly, well, it's formless. We know we can go right through it.
It has no boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to. If you move through it, you would not see.
That's one thing I love about flying in an airplane. I've always loved going through the clouds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then you go, you know, from being on Earth, you go through a cloud and the sun's out.
Yeah. And you're above the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. We always think of clouds being above.
As above, so below.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because the cloud, like the iCloud, that's what Ian says, we created the cloud. You better put all your stuff in the cloud. We're just saying, put all your stuff in the cloud.
Follow the cloud. Yeah.
And it's always a visual for me that it's above.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is a new painting, Sheila, the cloud.
Oh, yeah, I grooved on that. I mean, the painting I'm doing now, the one of Genesis, has the most incredible sky.
Wow.
That could be thought of as cloud in terms of what it looks like, the colors. It's not a traditional cloud, but yeah.
Well, there's a good point, our bias of a cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's one great thing about having the iCloud, you know, enter the descriptions or be added to it, you know, whatever, because it kind of shatters. I mean, what is an iCloud? It's a virtual
storage.
Virtual storage, exactly. So
it's pretty limitless, isn't it? I mean, is there any space limitation in the cloud. As far as I know, they just stick everything up there.
Mm-hmm. Up there. There it is again, Sheila. Yep.
Yeah, cloud is always in my perception over my head.
Yeah, over your head. That's good. It's funny. I kind of perceived it actually as standing in it, just like I was talking about going through the clouds in a plane. Maybe because that's my bias. I've always enjoyed being surrounded by a cloud because it seems so mystical to me to be, see something that looks so dense and white, and you take off into it and you go into it and it's nothing but air, you know. It doesn't have any, it doesn't feel like it has any mass to it.
And I was always fascinated and still am just laying there and staring at clouds and watching them change shape and form. And it's ever-changing.
I'm sure we'll hear more.
Well, maybe some good questions will come out of this.
Yes, Deb?
Yeah, we went from speechless manifestation to the cloud.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting correlation.
Kind of that ambiguous, that's not even probably the correct word, but that formless place.
Formless, yeah. Well, I was intrigued with his, with Ian's sentence about expectations. Again, I don't remember who was speaking, but he said, qualify the expectation and engage it. So this brings up a whole thing about expectation, because traditionally expectation is, I want to say previous to Ian, or would be a negative thing. You know, don't have any expectations. Have no expectations.
Expectations lead
to disappointment.
Right.
Yeah, so many times I heard people in relationships, well, I don't have any expectations, that way I'm never disappointed.
Well, did it apply to whom he was talking to?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't remember. I don't know, but he would often say what to expect when you're expecting.
So
what did he say to this person again about expectation?
He said, qualify the expectation and engage it. So engage your expectation. Is that a way to manifest something? Is that a way to create something? I expect.
Yes, but, and then, you know, there's another side to that. What if you've really been trying to create or manifest something and it hasn't, and so you just go, well, fuck it, and then you get to a point where you don't believe. If you don't believe, you don't really have an expectation. So what's that about? So, yeah, we get impatient. We get tough on ourselves, and it can be frustrating sometimes if you have a large desire and it's not here yet. And I think that a lot of new people especially go through that. I still do it on things.
Well, it's still, you know, what I hear is that it still engages time, because if you have an
expectation, it does.
And I'll say the M word. Do you remember Matthew's sessions when they were on, no longer to be heard, but where they were saying, you know, you have a timeline, you know, don't, you know, how much money do you want? And you want it by a time. Well, then you've just totally disengage the process, because you're including time in it, in your engagement. The way you said that, Sheila, was the expectation, qualify the expectation and then you engage it. Is that what it was?
Yeah, qualify the expectation and engage it.
It's a peanut butter sandwich thing again. You're meeting up. Okay, what is the expectation? You know, get clear with that, and then zip it right in together to meet your engage it. It already is. There's no time and space in between it.
that's the engaged portion of that, the engagement portion of.
Yeah, almost like when you engage a rocket and you take off, you know? Okay. Stop keeping your expectation. I have a visual on a timeline, but stop keeping your expectation in a position of expecting it to show up down the road.
Or is engaging in that expectation part of the manifestation creation process? Because when I first started my business, I walked around with these cards I printed and little signs I put on my car and acted like I had a business. I didn't have one, but I got one. You know, so I embraced it, and I, you know, it's that act as if thing.
Is there trip up on it?
In the new age world, sort of.
I know. That's the whole fake it till you make it thing.
Hmm?
That's the whole fake it till you make it thing.
Right.
That's just the, it feels like it's, I was going to say a degree apart from knowing.
Yeah, it feels a little mannish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the peanut butter sandwich thing, I loved when they got excited about that. I think Barbara brought it
up.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, in this last payday?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear that part. I mean, I've heard it twice. It's so interesting. We were saying earlier that you can hear things you didn't hear the first, second, third, 99th time before.
Well, I think we've always discussed, many of us have, that it's definitely, you're hearing it just for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think I would go as far as to say there are probably things inserted into it that
mm-hmm.
you hear one time and then you play it again and they really aren't there anymore.
Yeah.
They don't apply to that moment.
Mm-hmm. So was there any, what did she ask about the peanut butter analogy?
It wasn't a question. I think she was confirming something with it. You know, she was using that
mm-hmm.
as a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, I can't remember what it was referring to.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just fun to hear what I remember as Ian's reaction was, oh, we love the peanut butter sandwich. We're not
mm-hmm.
allowed to use that anymore. I don't think they said old school, but that was the inference. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
not, Bob won't let us use that anymore, but we love that. Because it is great, you know, it's the having no separation between you and you.
Mm-hmm.
What it did for me is it got me a peanut butter craving, so I went out and bought some peanut butter.
Cool.
From last week's show.
It had a really thick sandwich of peanut butter. I'm like, yeah, I can get a peanut butter.
Cool.
That's great. Well, there is a lot showing up right away without, in my world, without saying anything, without thinking about it. Feels like there's no thought. It's just, okay. You know, it's more, like, it's hard to describe because something will show up and I'll be like, oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted that, or I did just, I mentioned that the other day, or I didn't mention it, but I was thinking about it. Or, again, if you take time out of it and you're not expecting or anticipating having whatever that is show up at any particular time,
mm-hmm.
the timing doesn't matter. It's like, oh, I created
right.
that. Remember when I was talking to Renee, and she's saying, well, I haven't created anything or haven't manifested anything. Or created anything in my life. They said, yes, you have. And she was so surprised. I think it was Renee.
Is that the same person he said, if you get the allow part of it?
Yeah.
To get the allow part of it, because if you're trying to force it, you can't get it to you. And then he said, need it, KNEAD. He made that reference to Madeline as well. Remember, he told her to start kneading bread. So...
Mm-hmm.
And he said to that person
what
about
that?
Allowing it, he says, well, it's at your back door. You just have to open the door.
Right.
Or something to that effect, wasn't it? Like,
yeah,
Yeah, you've gotten the relaxed. You've gotten the relaxed down. Now just allow it. Open the door. Let it be. Let it come in.
Did he give it necessary time or opportunity for, or to treat or regard as acceptable? And one of the synonyms is to own.
Does that allow?
Mm-hmm. When I started becoming literal, because Ion says we're very literal, so when there's a, you know, something that we're trying to figure out, I like to look up the definition to see if I can get clarity. So, okay, so the acceptable part would deal with worthiness, too. I mean, you have to know you're worthy.
Yeah.
That's huge, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed
that.
Yeah,
that is huge.
Mm-hmm. That is definitely a qualifier for not receiving, I think. Not sure if that's quite the way to say
totally.
That.
Totally. Yes.
Yeah.
For me, anyway, I mean,
worthiness
is one of my big things, and I've gone through a lot of contrast and learning with that one.
I see see it in a lot of other people too, which always means, you know, which always reminds me that I own it still. If I can see it in someone else, I still believe that's something I. Because I don't think you'd look at things. Things don't glare at you in anyone else's world, because why would you care?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's like the elders are on the throne of God. They were there because they weren't worthy. They didn't think they were worthy to be God.
Mm.
They weren't on the throne. They were casting their crowns down. That had all to do about worthiness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Well, that's, you know, where Ion says, you know, we give you things, we put, you know, she was talking to somebody, and then you say, no, I don't want that. Or, you know, why aren't you doing the things we told you to do, I think was the topic of conversation at that point.
That's come up a few times.
Yes, it has.
Recently. Yeah, well, and the follow-up to that is, don't make me your enemy. Don't make us your enemy. Don't make yourself your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't allow yourself to have all this, you know, sit in your power and then question it. Because it creates destruction, or the cycle of nothing meeting up, syncing up, maybe.
Well, you know, a lot of people get in a place to blame God, you know, so to speak, thing, you know, where they're angry with God and the universe because things didn't go their way or they didn't get what they want. And you're really only making yourself the enemy. Don't make me your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if you're God, non-physical, saying, don't make me your enemy, you're basically an enemy to yourself. That's how I see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's how they're saying it as well. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can manifest and create things you totally don't want to.
Well, but is it a don't want, or is it a contrast so that you see what it is you'd rather create?
I would say it probably depends on how you perceive and handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And
what
was, Deb, you were saying that Randy asked the question, does non-physical appear to people according to their perception of non-physical?
She asked if non-physical responds to us the way we perceive non-physical, and Ion said pretty much.
I can totally see that. Doesn't that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of the able to perceive, because otherwise you couldn't perceive it. was outside of your, and he hates the word perception. But doesn't that make you want to kind of up the ante of what you think non-physical can do?
Heck yeah. Yeah. nice point there, Sheila. Yeah.
Well, but you can do, which, I mean.
With your non-physical.
I think that seamless alignment, there is no delineation between physical and non-physical, I would think, in the ascended state.
Mm-hmm.
So then it just correlates to what our perception is, what we can do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, because if you think little thoughts, you're going to get little things. If you think big thoughts, you're going to get big things, you know. Abundance,
well,
get that.
I was actually thinking in terms of taking it as Ion, interacting with Ion as Ion is, okay, I understand that our non-physical is part of Ion. I don't know how all that works, whatever it is. But if I, because I know I interact with Ion other than when I speak to him on payday or whatever. But if I thought Ion was capable of interacting with me on a much greater level than I'm experiencing now, isn't that kind of like, wouldn't that be more like a placeholder of how I can interact with my own non-physical? So,
yeah,
so it's easier for me at this stage to up the ante of the amount that I can interact with me in terms of creating the life that I desire on every level and my own happiness. Am I making any sense?
Yes.
It's almost like externalizing it until you can internalize it. I mean, because for most of my life, I couldn't get that God was not outside of me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very expansive.
Well, yeah, non-physical to respond to us the way we perceive non-physical, he says, pretty much. But there could be a separation with how you perceive non-physical, right there.
Oh, sure. For sure. That's why the whole, you know, let go of all the rules, let go of the biases, let go of the, let go, let go, let go, let go.
Let go.
You know,
let
I
God.
Always,
I said, let go and let God.
I heard that too in my head. I was, if it didn't have the religious connotations, I probably would have said it, but it's probably right there, you know, on the top of the to-dos in Iondom. What were you going to say, Deb?
Oh, now I forgot.
Yeah, there was, it's, how quickly we forget now is absolutely off the charts. Used to be 10 minutes. Now it's just,
yeah. I'm just happy to hear other people do it because it makes having blonde hair kind of a detriment.
I'm noticing it in so many other people, that, you know, the people that I engage.
Yes, yes.
I flew next to a guy on the plane yesterday, and he was actually about my same age, but we were talking about that, and I said, but have you also noticed how young people, you know, because people usually blame it on age, right? That's what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
That's the usual reasoning. And I talk to my kids. They don't remember stuff. They don't care.
No.
And the younger you get, I mean, what five-year-old do you ever talk to who remembered what they did 2 minutes ago?
Mm-hmm.
And we're constantly trying to engage them with that. Oh, what did you do? How did you like school today? You know, what did you do yesterday? I'm really conscious of that when I see little kids or, you know, when I hear it. It's like, then they look at you blankly like, well, what was yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember where I was.
Well, I understood we're getting rid of time.
So it's gone, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, even on these calls, don't you feel like you get on these calls and you're just like, where am I? What I don't, there's nothing but the call.
Right. You know, it's like you go into another world.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we do.
I think Ion has referenced that before.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go into the world where there's mint.
Mint?
M-I-N-T-S? Mint, just mint, just a plant mint. Because it's
supposedly
I remember,
not native.
Well, didn't you hear Bob say that? Bob said Ion is from, Bob said Ion said mint is from another world.
Say it again?
Yeah.
Bob said that Ion said that mint is from another world. The plant mint. And I used to, when I lived in Paris, I used to go to the market, the outdoor markets, and I used to buy like bunches of mint. I loved mint. I put it in hot water. I would just chew on the leaves. I loved it. And I remember that. I'm like, oh my God, I missed that. So I went to find it in stores, and it's like, you can't find it anywhere. And then I found some, and it's like from Colombia. I'm like, they have to go to Colombia? They have to export mint to Colombia, to the south? The land of mint julep?
Oh, well, come to my house, Sheila.
Oh,
we
really? Okay.
It is rampant.
Well, all right.
It's
well, then
so
you
much
must
fun.
Have the other world connection, because mail me some, will you? I'm like dying here. I'm having a mint withdrawal.
Well, that property may be the reason we're there, is that it's another world connection, because otherwise we don't fit in there. So I could totally see that being in another world, those 5 acres.
Oh, really?
Kind of. Yeah, I told you, I say I live on Psycho Street. We don't know anyone. We don't talk to anyone.
Oh, I remember you saying that.
Mm-hmm. You do? That's scary.
Yeah, I know. I actually remembered something. Of course, it's from probably a year or two ago.
Yeah, we have actually mint and cilantro right now have seeded themselves so prolifically.
Prolifically,
I'm not sure that actually
yeah.
applies in this case, but they're everywhere. And we have a huge garden, and within the garden that we tilled, you know, we
mm-hmm.
turned it all up. And that was after there was a cover crop on it, and I just have never had seeds come up quite that way. Mint is like that. I'll give
now,
it that.
Now, what were these seeds? Because I didn't hear.
Cilantro and mint are both.
Oh, cilantro, yeah.
Are both coming up where they weren't planted.
Oh.
We had a 10-by-10 patch.
Mm-hmm.
10-by-10-foot patch of cilantro, and none of it was planted. It was all stirred
that's
up.
Big.
That's huge.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
It's kind of extraordinary. And then the
mm-hmm.
mint is just everywhere within everything. It's growing in between all the peas. It's growing in between all the lettuces. So I'll send you some. See how it travels.
Yeah, I think it'll be all wilty by the time.
You'll get mint from another world.
Yes. You should be able to plant it where you are. In a
oh,
pot.
It grows like crazy here. Yeah.
Well,
it's a southern thing, mint juleps.
It's pretty funny.
That's true. Yeah. That is weird, though, that they would have to import it.
Yeah, Colombia. I'm like, I was in Trader Joe's. It's the only Trader Joe's I found it. It's like, country of origin, Colombia. I'm like, really?
You better be careful. It may not be mint if it's from Colombia. What's Sheila growing over there?
Oh, my God.
Do you remember, too, that I think it was Renee again or somebody, I think, on the East Coast, that spiders are not from this world?
And no, spiders are from this world, but she was from a world that didn't have spiders.
Ah, you're correct.
Hmm.
Well,
I don't like spiders.
But it's another thing we have a lot of.
Oh, okay. It's not worth it then for the mint for me. I'm sorry.
Because of the mint, you have spiders?
No, not because of it. I said that's another thing we have a lot of. We're digressing here, aren't we?
I gotta tell you the best spider story. I'm sorry, I know this is a segue, but
please.
When I was living in Ireland, they have a lot of spiders. And maybe it's the same climate they have in Seattle, right? And they would have these really big spiders, and a lot of times they'd crawl up through the bathroom tub and all that stuff. Anyway, so I had a room, a bedroom that was where I worked, and I was doing an illustration, and I had a deadline, and I had to get it done. And I walked into it, and there was this big motherfucker of a spider in the corner right over my drafting table. I mean, it was so big, you know, and I got used to, oh, my God, even talking about it, my skin's crawling. And I used to, when I saw what I would consider a big spider, I would just take the vacuum cleaner and suck it up with the tube, right? Get near it. Even that would freak me out, right? And so anyway, this one was so big it wouldn't fit through the tube. And I was like, it was so horrible. So, and I hardly knew anybody there. And I mean, I'm out in the boonies, and I called this neighbor and I said, I'm sorry, but I have a really big spider. Like this woman that had a B&B. I only knew she had a B&B. I'm like, would you mind coming over and getting rid of the spider? I can't work.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, my God. I'm sure she thought I was some pussy lunatic.
What'd she do? Use a broom?
I have no idea. I left the house. I'm like, please just take care of it. I just can't even.
Oh, my God.
That's funny.
That is
when
so
I
funny.
First
I
moved here, there was a spider that ran across my foot. And we caught it, my daughter and I caught it under a jar. And so we looked it up on the internet, and it looked exactly like the brown recluse spider. It had that shape. And so I called the critter control. And I said, I got a brown recluse spider here. He goes, ma'am, and I just moved here to North Carolina. He goes, ma'am, how big is that spider? I said, well, God, he's about, the lengthspan's almost. Half of that. She goes, I ain't no brown recluse. I'm like, yes, it is. Got the marking. It's a queen of spider. You have to come get it. He goes, ma'am, a brown recluse is a very small spider. Now, that's just a regular garden spider. I think you should take your jar out there to the backyard, throw that spider over the fence, and just let it live a happy little spider life. Where did I move? What world is this?
That's great. Okay, mine was when we first moved to Washington. We were in our house. We'd been in about a month, and I had never seen so many spiders and such big ones ever. And I'm okay with them, but they would run from one side of the room to the other, and it was like lightning speed. So that just freaked me out. I mean, I'd like jump on the couch to try to get away. And my husband, being the scientist he is, we caught one too, Deb, and he gets a microscope, takes it, we look under it because it looks, we want to know what we were dealing with, right? Well, there were two types. One was really poisonous. One wasn't. They look exactly alike. What the fuck is that about, by the way? Did we create them just to play with us? You know, okay, this one's going to really get you if you decide you want that experience. But this one's okay. Anyway, and they were called Gigantus was the name.
Oh, I never heard of that. Yeah, it sounds like the way they move, scantily.
Well, we found out they were the fastest moving spider in North America.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot. I don't know. I don't exactly know the velocity or what that actually translates to, but they move some pretty damn fast. So we were going away for a couple of days, and I'm like, this is just creeping me out so much. So I put one of those sticky traps out. Oh my God, we got home and there were 26 spiders. I counted them.
Oh wow.
And I'm like,
oh my God.
And Sheila stayed in my house, Deb.
Oh
Oh, my God.
She didn't know this. But yeah, she wouldn't have been there, obviously.
But after that, I
made a pact. I had a friend in my life who's been to not talk to dead people, but she speaks to animals. And she had said she'd made a pact with, you know, if she ever had anything going on, ants, whatever, she's like, she talked to them and says, okay, this is where you can go, this is where you can't. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, here it is, spiders. If you're on the wall, you can live. If you're on the floor, the vacuum is what you're going to get. And I swear it has worked ever since. We have very few spiders now, but they have daddy long legs on the wall. Every so often there'll be one of those gigantus, but rarely, unless I just can't see them. But literally, they used to run across the floor all the time, so I know I would know they were there.
Oh,
but so I don't know what happened.
You would.
Well, that's the Finhorn thing.
The spiritual.
Yes. Why'd you bring that up?
Because I stayed there for a week, but that was the thing they did. You know, Finhorn, they're famous for that. Everything is, you know, they would name their, you know, oven and their vacuum cleaners, and they would like, now it's ridiculous to think, you know, but like, they had their own essences. But yeah, they did that with the bugs. It was like, or whatever. They didn't use any pesticides on their gigantic vegetables, and they would just talk. They'd say, okay, these bugs, you can't eat this. You know, you have to go over here and, you know, and leave that alone. And apparently it worked. But how does that work? Because it's your non-physical?
I mean, yeah, because Ion says that the dogs, if your pets, they're your non-physical. So I would think that, and he said that they will, I mean, he told people to talk to you, tell your dog you're leaving, but you'll be right back or, you know, those kinds. I do. I tell my cat that, and I have to tell the squirrels to go away because they like to play in my planters, dig berry nuts.
I was going to say, I feel a lot closer to the animals on our property, you know, with that connection kind of validated by Ion. I mean, I always felt close to animals, but their being your non-physical has fascinated me. You know, then you look at other people's dogs with them or what other animals people have. You know what it made me think of when we were talking? Do you remember on the last payday? And Bob's like, Ion, what is it with those these geckos here? They're running all over the place. And I am going, that's you. You're doing that, Bob. And he said, and they also spit. They also spit on the,
Oh my God, I just got that. That is hysterical.
Yeah, I heard that.
The famous, you know, how many times, you know, have we heard Bob sitting in our private sessions
and running around like a gecko?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Wow.
That's
there
funny.
You go.
Well, the spiders can represent or have characteristics that represent ancient symbols of infinity. And I'm reading that they're a symbol of mystery, power, and growth. And the symbolism that has both a dark and light side, reflecting its connection with life's many facets.
I remember.
I don't need spiders in my house to have a meaningful experience.
I can remember reading a lot about that when I would see an animal. You know, the medicine card books that were popular for a while. And
yeah.
Hummingbirds represent joy. I always love that one.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of those. But, yeah, when you'd have an animal run across your path, what was that? Right now we have an almost epidemic of rabbits, and it's totally hilariously fun. You drive down the street, and it's like you're in a video game or something. They're darting back and forth across the road. It's hysterical. It's like I laugh out loud every time. And I always have birds fly below they fly in front of my car, like on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked other people about that. I thought everybody had that. I think I even asked Ion once. I can't remember what they said. I think it wasn't a big deal. But anyway, I find it fascinating. It always happens now. Now, is that because I talk about it and it happens, or is that because it's just what I expect in a...
Oh,
my non-physical flight.
I'm back to expectation.
Mm-hmm. Qualify your expectation.
And engage it.
I think
or maybe
you
it's just
that.
A beautiful thing to enjoy. I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's not. It's without a good or bad qualifier.
Mm-hmm.
I qualified it as something that I noticed,
mm-hmm.
and then it seems to become a constant.
Is it because you're so powerful that with your noticing and engaging it that it continues to show up? Is that what was being referenced earlier in when he says you know, better like what you create or don't tell? No, he said just based on a knowing, not I think I might, et cetera.
Yeah. Because then the kid ice cream. Then the shit ice cream can show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't thinking of it as powerful necessarily, but I think I know what you mean by, you know, it's deliberate. You know, is that I'm engaging that part of my knowing.
Right. And, I mean, that is powerful, not from an authority standpoint, but, you know, your outer world. I mean, look at what Sheila did. She created a volcano.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then what is it about when you wouldn't ask something if you don't already know it?
Yeah. I like
so,
that.
Yeah. Did you know you could make a volcano explode already? I mean, maybe
well,
that's
I
different
didn't.
Than asking.
Yeah, because I didn't ask. I didn't, that was like, oh, really?
Mm-hmm. But you asked to stop, you didn't, you wanted your timing to be different. Right?
I wanted to go back to, a certain world that was the United States, unbeknownst. Well, I don't know, I can't even say unbeknownst to me. And I'm
so then maybe it happened to be part of your creation?
Well, apparently it happened because I needed more time to find what I needed to find to create the shift to go into the other world. But I didn't know that. Ian's words were my inattention created attention in Iceland. That ended up keeping me in Paris another week, along with millions of other people that were inconvenienced. Oh, well, so sorry.
You never made the tabloids. I wouldn't worry about it. You've got hatch
I remember
protection.
I was new into eyeing them, and I was like, that's just so freaking weird. I'm not even going to think about it.
That's great.
I'm sorry you have to sleep on the airport floor for a week, family of four. It was my fault because I didn't go to the cheese shop. There were no
you don't know what wonderful. Yeah. I don't think anybody who was there wasn't there as part of their creation as well.
I don't know. They could have just been by default if they were just, you know, in their own little man world.
That's still creation, though, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Because if I was in Paris and I had wanted to get home, and you pulled that fucking stunt, I would have found a private plane to fly on. No,
you would have gotten what you wanted.
Funny, because Carol was stuck. She was in Poland. She was. Remember that plane that went down and took half of the Polish government with it?
Yeah.
Remember that? She had to go to that funeral because she was with whoever she
right.
was protecting or whatever. She couldn't
right.
get back. She couldn't get out of Poland. And she ended up hiring a guy to drive her to Frankfurt so she could take the train to Paris.
So she made it, right?
She made it, yeah, because I guess she's powerful enough to say, you, drive me
absolutely.
To Frankfurt. So.
Absolutely. There you go. That's a good point. I mean,
or like the people who just, you know, were late to work the day of 9-1-9-11.
Yeah.
My phone's beeping, sorry. But, yeah, you know, or a missed train or a missed flight or...
Or the tornado that doesn't take your house down.
Right. And I think that that's an important point to bring up because a lot of people I hear in their questioning are quite concerned as to what the, quote, future is going to be and the talk of the EMP going down. And, you know, there's sort of this perception that the whole world's going to stop and nothing's going to be available, you know, like a catastrophe. And
still a lot of victims.
But it is all new and can sound scary. So, you know, those words, not in my world, and just resting in that place and allowing that to be is what will shift that, I think.
And I always felt like I remember the big themes of no time and then knowing that you didn't ever die, you know, that you're just changing form also was a great comfort because a lot of the concerns are, oh, if a disaster happens, I'm going to perish. Well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's more suffering, or maybe it's more the disaster factor. You don't want to, the fear is being without, which is a less than position, which you would never be in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a cycle that I think you just, once you get off the merry-go-round, you never go back. Once you know how to not worry about that, worrying doesn't, I think we're confused. Noticing is, you know, is it okay to notice and prepare? I know that I know who we're talking about, hearing the different people. Well, I want to be prepared. Well, what would you be prepared for? That's how could you ever be prepared?
Well, you can stock up a bunch of food and get guns and water and all that kind of stuff, but then that puts you into that frequency of
survivalism.
Boy, that would be really embracing the expectation or...
and engaging it.
Engaging it, I mean,
As your neighbor comes and steals all the guns and the water goes bad from red algae and, let's see, the food rots or gets stolen or goes into a sinkhole.
Well, how many people did that during Y2K only to find out that they just had a bunch of stuff on hand?
Exactly.
No disaster happened.
Exactly.
But they bought into the meme and the, you know, the hysteria that goes with it. And
yeah, this
I
is kind of
one of my aunt's house. She had all these gallons of water in the bathtub. My kids were like, "What's that for?" She goes, "Oh, why'd you pray he's coming?"
Oh, my God. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. I'm grateful we are where we are. For me, I'm really happy I chose this. And speaking of which, yeah, what was that about? That's interesting.
But what was about?
They chose you.
Oh yeah, that's pretty cool.
Did you hear that, Deb?
Yeah, it was your desire. At some point, it was your stated desire, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because he says, we knew you would come forth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the bizarre, you know, differences and the, I mean, it's incredible when you look at all of the different people involved from all the different walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty cool because there's no stereotype.
Yeah,
random.
I can remember the almost to the minute of the feeling of hearing payday or cash flow then or discovering it. And this is when Sheila and I were, you know, got together pretty early on talking about it, and it was just so exciting. It was like there was a definite unexplainable knowing of being in the place that you knew you had set up for yourself, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I've arrived.
And on that note, I need to go eat some lunch.
Okay.
Well, that was fun.
It was very fun.
Thanks for
Thanks for having me. That was fun.
Yeah, thanks, Deb. This was a blast.
Very, very enjoyable.
Yeah.
So well, you girls have a great day and enjoy Boston, and Sheila, enjoy your lunch. I'm going to be a peasant today and do more yard work, or maybe I'll just tell the angels to come do it.
Go look online and talk, look at Finhorn, right?
Yeah,
they do it.
Yeah, the little fairies. They engage the fairies.
Exactly. That was a pretty fascinating story, actually. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
Well, this has been fun.
Yes,
thanks.
It has.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Talk to you
thanks.
Later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.